Yeah, talking about liquidiv.com, promo code Nooners at checkout. You see us drinking it on the show every single day. Where would we be, Japes, without Liquid IV in our lives?
Dehydrated, we'd have headaches, we'd be tired, yeah. Exhausted.
Yep.
Not be able to get through the day, get through work, we'd be sick all the time.
I'd be hungover. Every single day. Love the Liquid IV. Liquid IV hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drinks out there, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick. It's clear why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. It's just a little tiny stick full of powder. Pop it in 16 ounces of water. You're good to go. What you reckon, Jabes? Double or triple hydrated?
I would say double.
Oh, I'd say triple.
What?
Nay, I'll say triple today. Huge fan of Liquid IV. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. With Liquid IV, get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code Nooners at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Nooners at liquidiv.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ross Patterson Revolution!
Where have you gone, my Rosalia?
Man, this that is a one? 90s night.
Yeah.
It's a 90s night.
That one, huh? Rosalia.
Yeah.
Off that album. Off That's the one you would choose.
Better Than Ezra.
Deluxe.
I was a fucking huge fan of that.
That's the one that's the song you would choose?
Well, look, obviously you could go with the fucking surefire hit. Yeah.
Living with you. And it's good. Wow.
Yeah. You could go with that one, but that's an obvious choice.
Do you think that the audience is like, oh, I cannot wait to hear their beautiful voices?
I do think that.
Do you? Yep.
And I think here's what I'm going to equate it to. The Country Music Awards were on tonight. We were watching those. And
this is
my point. When a familiar, friendly voice comes on and sings a tune, you perk right up and you're like, oh, fuck. Who is that?
Yeah.
You want to tell the audience who opened up the CMAs tonight?
Oh,
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Shahoot.
I want you to hold my hand.
Hold my hand.
I'll take you to the promised land.
Hold my hand.
I want to love you
the best that I can.
I was shocked. And then, like, everybody in country music came out and rallied around the family like a pocket full of shells and fucking
you
sang
guys.
With them. And it was like, holy shit. Even fucking Keith Urban.
The most country. I mean, talk about true, pure country. We're talking about Keith Urban.
He's
born in the south of, where is he from?
He's not gay. He's Australian.
Where is he from? Born in the south
of
Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The southern tip.
So he's from the south. Southern tip of Australia.
Southern tip of Australia. Yeah, yeah.
Nothing.
He's super straight, and there's nothing. Nope. He has a loving
American pie
to Nicole Kidman.
Fried chicken.
Yep.
Gravy.
They live in Nashville, and they have 0 children.
Yep.
And you know,
and
it's
lots
just
of hot,
super
steamy, straight sex. It's weird that he calls it straight sex.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, I have lots of straight sex.
That's what real men call it.
He says, oi.
Real men call it, yeah. Oi.
He says, oi. Yeah. I have a lot of straight sex with my gorgeous wife.
He says that a lot.
He says a lot. Straight sex.
Straight sex.
So, straight guys say, I'm having straight sex with my wife.
Every time.
Oh, okay. And I'm going to put it in right in the vagina.
I was at this barbecue joint for lunch today, and there was a bunch of dudes sitting around, and you know, in North Carolina, this one guy goes, hey, man, I had some of this fucking straightest sex last night I've ever had in my entire life.
The other guy's like, man, I bet you yeah. I bet you put it in her vagina. And look, that's how real guys talk. It's just, man, that straight sex is great.
That's straight sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
So that's the type of hot, steamy sex that Keith Urban has with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
Who's always been hot, by the way. Like, I don't understand. She went from one gay man to another.
What was the other gay man?
I don't know. Tom Cruise.
I would urge you to bite your tongue.
I love Tommy Ballgame. I think he is
not gay.
I think Tom Cruise is the biggest movie star of all time. And when I say movie star, that is different than actor. I think he has been the biggest movie star ever.
In the classic sense, when people used to be like fun movie stars.
Fun movies, action. You know, he does his own stunts and all of that shit. Like, he's probably, in my opinion, the biggest movie star of all time, who has just kept it going for, fuck man, damn near 40 years at this point.
Yeah.
Is he the best actor of all time? No, that's DDL. But yes, I am saying that that the rumor has always been with
I
Tom.
Won't hear it.
No, you won't.
I won't hear it. He
no,
is.
You won't.
A hero. He's a saint.
I love him.
I love him.
We've had this conversation.
Mr. Cruz.
I've met him twice.
I know.
And I would let him put it in. Like, I get his whole shit. I get all of it. And it's when you fucking meet him, you are the only person on the face of the earth, and he makes you feel more special than your own fucking parents, and it is a magical experience.
Right.
So I get it. And I don't care. I don't care if he's gay. I don't care
he's
if
not, though,
gay.
So.
Yeah. Well,
he's not. So it's it's like he has lots of straight sex. He says it himself.
I don't know. But
all
since,
the time.
Since we're on this subject, and we talked about this a few shows back, a lot of people writing in today about the Charlie Sheen thing.
Sure.
And they were like, hey, man, how did you know about the fucking gay videos and all that shit? And was like, man, I fucking told you.
Well, you said on this show, so did they ask you how you knew? Because you said you heard it from the Vivid guy.
I think some people don't necessarily believe it, or like the Tom Cruise thing. They just can't wrap their minds around it. Where it's
well,
like,
that one's
no
not
way.
True.
No way.
That one's not true.
Come on, Jesse. Come on.
What are you talking about? Honestly, what are you talking about? Who was he?
I'm not going to get into Tom Cruise because I like him, and I don't want to share the stories that I've heard because they're extremely graphic.
Let's stick to the facts, okay? Let's stick to the facts that you know.
Right.
I don't want you going off on a little rumor.
I don't know. No, I'm not. And that's why I'm not going to say it, because it is. I don't have any proof of that.
Yeah,
I don't know anybody.
So
I don't know anybody who's been intimate with Tom Cruise. So I'm gonna give this one. I'm let it go. I don't fucking know. So
okay. So why even say it? He's not gay.
Because the speculation is.
My God, my Tom, my sweet Tom.
No, for
he's
years
not
and years
gay.
And years.
He's not gay. I mean, this is crazy.
You watch the fucking Leah Remini thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that. Look, the Church of Scientology has been covering up. Homosexuality for years there.
All right, we're gonna have
you know
to
the other it. One I mentioned was Travolta. He's in that fucking group.
Oh, that's right, but he is actually gay.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Listen to the way he talks.
Have you ever seen him
look
butt fuck another man in person?
I've heard.
Yeah.
He propositions male masseuses.
Yeah, he does.
Masseuses?
Masai.
I've heard that, you know, at like Four Seasons or whatever, shit like that. But, you know, again, I don't know anyone.
Never understood that, by the way. Kevin Costner got popped at a Four Seasons, and you don't get jacked off at a Four Seasons. Like,
you know, it's like in the fucking ghetto,
yes,
with the like Christmas lights in the window. You know, that's the fucking sign.
It's got to be some form of Asian.
Don't be an idiot.
But American writing. So it's like, hey, like you don't go into a Four Seasons and demand a fucking flip over. Like, you just don't do it because it's a classy environment. Like,
it's corporate, dude.
Yeah.
It's corporate.
They're not going to jack you off inside of Four Seasons. So, mm-mm. like, just get that through your heads, man.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to take a cab somewhere.
Sure.
It's going to be seedy. You're going to mm-hmm. feel awful about it. Like, mm-hmm. that's what that world is.
Yeah.
You don't get jacked off inside of a Four Seasons. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not going to be, like, gorgeous. There's not going to be amazing candles and, like, clean linens.
No. No,
you know, it's not going to be that way.
It's going to be Charlie Sheen's house. And again, going back to this. So this story fucking bombshell today that he raped Corey Haim on the set of Lucas,
mm-hmm.
which I love the movie Lucas. And
you
now
did.
I look at this as like it's sullied for me. It's dirty. It's a dirty, tainted movie now, you know?
Yep.
Because now when I think of Lucas out there on the football field, I wonder like, oh, did they shoot that scene right after he got raped? Like, now I'm going to think that forever when I see the movie Lucas. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And what I found fascinating was the fact that the divorce papers from Denise Richards
mm-hmm.
came out as well. And she states in there right up to the edge of like, I don't want my kids around him. The pornography he's watching.
The boys look underage.
So
she brought him to this place to talk to him about it. It was like they went on vacation or something. In the papers, it says they went on vacation to talk about this specific thing.
This specific issue.
What ended up happening was he just started online betting, wouldn't leave the room, just got like, wouldn't talk, and was just like literally just playing poker their whole vacation and wouldn't even talk to her or leave the room.
Wow, weird.
So the conversation never happened, which already would be a kind of scary thing because you're confronting a pedophile.
Yeah.
So you don't know even what you're dealing with.
And it's Charlie Sheen. He's fucking nuts anyways.
Nuts.
Oh, and then in the divorce papers, she asked if he had had an AIDS test. And he said, fuck off. Like, yes, I've had a test. Fuck off. I don't have to show you or tell you about it.
Sure. And, Sheen. What a darling man. Oh,
boy. And that, I mean, so look, knowing what I know about the other shits with this, did this story surprise me today? No, it didn't.
Like, I think you shockingly. Even named his name.
I did.
Yeah. In one of the shows.
I did.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. So the thing with Corey Haim, which was interesting, is that he was 19, Haim was 13. So the age difference was
Sheen was 19?
Was 19.
Gotcha.
Haim was 13. They were on the movie together.
Okay.
They engaged in anal sex, smoked weed, fucking whatever. And then he got like super standoffish and cold to him afterwards.
Haim or Sheen?
Sheen. And when Haim wanted to mess around again,
mm-hmm.
Sheen was like cold to him and like wouldn't even, was just like, see ya. So the age difference was significant, but it definitely puts in place Sheen's deal
at an early age. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So it was rape. He was 13, but it was two younger
boys
that were
sure
possibly gay, maybe homo, just dealing with their own sexuality.
Then the fucking Vivid thing makes sense later because that's what I didn't understand about the Vivid thing where, you know, they were getting all the videos about him sucking another dude's dick for crack and all that other shit was I didn't understand why this late in life. Like, I thought it was something else. So I had a conversation with a friend of mine over this. And I said that, you know, it was my buddy was there. And he was just like, what do you think about the Charlie Sheen thing? There's no way. And I was like, the way I can see it is if you're so rich and you've done the most fucked up shit you can possibly do.
You can't get any higher.
Yeah. Then you're just looking for other shit. And that was kind of my reasoning at the time. Now hearing this story today. All right, if it started from a young age, then this makes total sense.
That he was, it sounds like he was grappling with it his whole life, which is where like really horrible drug addiction sometimes stems from.
A lot of people, yeah.
So, but also like he may have been molested when he was younger. He was in the fucking world with like absentee dad and stuff like that. So
who knows?
That may have imprinted on him younger, which is why he's looking at younger boys. So there's like all these weird psychological things, but he's an amazingly horrible dude.
Yeah.
But I think it stems from a life of having to cover up everything forever.
Yeah. And I mean, fuck. From her standpoint, what I've always heard about the ex-wives, her and the other one.
The Brooke one or before that?
Brooke and Denise.
Okay.
Denise Richards. That Brooke Mueller and then Denise Richards was financially, Charlie Sheen had he made so much money that if they didn't cater to him, they would get nothing from these divorces and all of this shit. So, you know, if she knew that back then, and she didn't fucking say anything and was holding out for just because she wanted to get money
that's
from this
an
divorce.
Interesting thing as well.
That's
also
even,
I'm not.
She has kids. Like, what the fuck, bro?
I'm not going to discount the fact that Sheen is a scary motherfucker. Like, that's someone I would not want to be. Him and OJ. Like, I would not want to be in a room alone or with other people, actually, to let's be clear.
Right.
With Charlie Sheen.
He's
a scary, unpredictable motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's a fucking weird
guy. I'm not
going to
totally like get down on her for that, but also like you have kids. So
he's a weird guy. I told you my friend repped him for that tour during that whole Tiger Blood shit and all of that stuff, and I wrote a bunch
of whoever was repping him during that time too is a motherfucker, whoever your friend
They didn't know.
What do you mean they didn't know?
They booked him for the shows and then...
But this was after his breakdown. So if people weren't trying to get him help...
During the breakdown. So anyways, he gets a call. I'll tell you how this all shook out, that whole Tiger Blood shit and all of it. He gets a call. It was right out. So he got fired from 2 and a Half Men, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck you. I'll go on the road and make my own shows and do this one man thing. So, you know, the agency does that. They do the booking tours for stand up and... I mean, I guess that's what you're classifying that as, or like a one-man show, essentially. And my buddy's job was every city he was in doing the stand-up show, he would book him for a nightclub afterwards. And so Sheen would have to go show up for 2 hours at a nightclub and then get paid $100,000 a piece just for an appearance fee. And you shuttle him in into the club, out of the club, collect the money and go. And that's what it is. So like when I asked him about this as this was going on, he goes, man, I'm gonna be honest with you, I haven't seen him the first 4 or 5 nights. And I was like, what do you mean you haven't seen him? And he goes, I can confirm that he made it to the club in and out, and he goes that he was there and I could see him from a distance, but he goes the security he had at that time was so fucking crazy, he goes I couldn't really get near him, and he goes he was so paranoid about the paparazzi and everything that was going like down at that time with the Tiger Blood shit, that he was ordering 4 blacked out Lincoln Navigators, and then he would choose which one he got in and out of every night, so that way you couldn't follow him. And so I was like, when did you finally get to meet him? And he goes, probably about the 5th or 6th city. He goes, it was so chaos, and there were so many fans and screaming and fucking, you know, reporters and nuts. And he goes, you come out, you see all the 4 Lincoln Navigators, they shove you in one and you're just kind of like, oh, what the fuck? Where am I going? I don't have any friends, but I know I'm going to the hotel. Well, the 5th or 6th night, he got shoved into the car and he was in with Charlie Sheen. And so he was like, hey man, it's me. I'm so-and-so. And I'm the one who's repping your thing. He was like, oh, awesome, man. This is great. This is crazy, isn't it? Chaos. Nuts. And it was just like, my buddy was like, me, yeah. And he goes, where are we going? What are we doing? Like, are you staying at the same hotel I'm staying at? And he's just like, don't worry about it. You're with me. We can go anywhere we want. We can go anywhere we want. So he was like, all right, so where are we going? He's like, strip club. Let's go to a strip club. Let's go to a strip club. Mm-hmm. So they would go to a strip club and do other shit. And this went on for like 20 cities, but he said he only saw him like one other time. Again, unless you got shoved into his world, the security and all that shit was so tight that he didn't physically see him, but he communicated through emails and texts and all that shit and like missed appearances, and people were just going bug fuck at that time. Because that was like the height of like, you know, Twitter just got it started and he had a huge account. And I mean, that was a fucking wild time. Looking back on it now, you know what happened, where what happened was he found out he had AIDS
right
before that, started flipping out. The doctor said he needed to get clean, you know, be healthy and all that other shit, and that's when he went on that crazy diet and then started doing steroids. So most of that shit, my buddy said, was like roid rage at the time.
Oh, right.
So like that crazy, like manic, out of control was just...
Mixed with like the cocktail for AIDS.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
It was like steroids and this other shit, but it was like, man, it was an aggressive, you know.
Oh, he's such an... He's just such a child.
The whole thing is
like, figure your fucking shit out.
It's fucked up. Like, you haven't heard fucking shit out of Emilio, you know?
No.
That's his fucking brother. Emilio Estevez. You haven't heard anything about it out of him.
I know.
But yeah, that's that story today. Like, and we'll get into, there was a few more that came out today. And it's like, is this a part of our everyday thing now? Because it feels like it is going to be for a long time. And there's no reprieve in sight from these accusations on shit. Every day I feel like I'm reading about one. Mm-hmm. My boy from Gossip Girl, you know, Chuck Bass. Mm. Fuck, man. But we'll get to that. We got some sponsors who pay for this whole fucking shindig to be on the air. First and foremost, we're talking about straightrazors.com. I've been with us since day one. Finest, loveliest shaving kit in the biz. Can I get a two-time Ric Flair? Woo, woo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Oh, you know we're talking about that tonight.
Oh, you know.
Straightrazors.com's got the finest shaving products in the business. They've got the number one ranked aftershave, number one ranked cologne, and their straight razors literally take a day and a half off of your shave. If you're nervous about trying a straight razor, they got some safety ones to get you going, but these razors are fucking legit. If you're looking for a nice Christmas gift for a brother, a father, or maybe a long-lost lover.
What?
Maybe. If she's pregnant. Get that pregnant bush shave. Yes. They've also got mustache wax, beard oil, beard shampoo, and beard conditioner. Go to straightrazors.com. Use the promo code REVOLUTION for 20% off. Again, straightrazors.com. Use the promo code REVOLUTION for 20% off. Next up, we got strikeforceenergy.com. Shablonkers. Strikeforce Energy is in... by the way, this is huge news today for Strikeforce Energy. They just got picked up in 108 more 7-Elevens today.
Fuck, that's huge.
I know. Talked to Sean Mattson earlier before we went on the air, and they are all the way from Virginia Beach now down to Outer Banks, North Carolina.
Shit.
Yeah, so they're right at the register along the coast, on the East Coast. You can just go, you can go walk up right to the register, and I think they're offering a deal with like water. So like, you know, you buy a bottle of water and you get a fucking Strikeforce.
That's cool.
They're pairing it up. When you see it in the store, you're going to flip out. You're going to be like, oh, fuck, Ross, this is what you're talking about? It's amazing. Or you can just order it online. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com. It's a tasty, tiny little tin pouch full of energy. Just rip it open, squeeze it into any liquid available. Talking about waters, beers, liqueurs, Kool-Aids, you name it. And it goes in everything. They got four flavors. Original, lemon, orange, and make America grape again. They've also got a 750 milliliter bottle that sits on your countertop or your bar top. And you can just boom, boom,
set
pop a couple squirts
it.
And yeah. And then be on your way. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com. Try a 10-pack if you're curious about it. It's only $9.95. And they ship everywhere in the entire world. They got a subscription of the month club, which we have. And we're big fans of StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use the promo code REVOLUTION for 20% off.
I heard that it counteracts the tryptophan in turkey. So
it does.
If you guys want to cancel that out, just take a little Strikeforce before the big day.
Yeah. Yeah. Last but not least, James, you know I've been waiting for you to do this noise all day long. I'm talking about At Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed, the first ever romance novel for dudes, Jables. Oh, that was probably your best one ever.
Oh my gosh, thanks.
Yeah, and you started laughing after it because I think you realized it. Did you realize it?
Yeah, it came from a different place.
Guttural.
It came from a different place.
Man, it came from my straight sex place.
Yeah, it came from my loins.
My loins. Speaking of loins.
My loins.
There's nothing but loins in At Night She Cries While He Rides a Steed. Is it the craziest book ever written? You're goddamn right it is. Does it have...
Nothing but no.
Nothing but no. Does it have a 5-star rating on Amazon? Fucking A right it does. Does it have the top 10 highest rating on audible.com? 4.8. Fuck you, it does.
Swish.
Funniest book ever written by the genius Ross Masterantonio Patterson. Are you just giving basketball analogies tonight?
None but net.
Yeah. Go to Amazon, buy the shit, or you can go to anywhere, truthfully. You can go to fucking Barnes & Noble, Walmart.com, the whole shit. Grab the book and put it in a stocking for a loved one. Nothing but net.
Swish.
I want to get into the Ric Flair doc last night. You're probably wondering why I didn't lead with it. Well, I was a tad disappointed in it. And I'd waited for this for a very long time.
Are we being nitpicky?
I'm going to be nitpicky, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
He is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, figures in wrestling history.
Personality-wise,
he's got the biggest personality next to, like, Ali, I would say. Arguably in sports, like history. All of his phrases, I mean, shit, they still say them today, man. Every college kid says these today, like, it's fucking Ric Flair, man. And when I watch this, and I don't want to say it's because I'm a director, because I don't want to shit on everybody's, like, I don't do that. I don't shit on people's directing, because it's fucking hard and you make a choice. However, I just think they made the wrong fucking choice in this. And I'll tell you why. Because the director inserted himself into the documentary, which I did not like.
A lot. It slowed it down.
A lot. They used so many shots of him from behind and him talking to Ric Flair. It was like, bro, this isn't what a documentary is. I'm not supposed to hear you, know what you look like, or any of this shit. And it seemed to me, and we had this discussion last night after we watched it, like, it seemed to me like he wanted to be Ric Flair.
Yeah. And I mean, he wanted a little bit of recognition for this one, because you said he did the Leitner.
He did the Christian Leitner one.
Which was amazing.
Which was great, but he wasn't in that.
Didn't see him one time. Good. Didn't hear his voice.
No.
Loved it.
Wasn't in it. None of it. Like, it almost seemed like he wanted to be Neve from fucking Catfish for some reason. And I went online to look up this director, and they had some, like, behind the scenes footage of, like, he posted, was like, oh, this didn't make it. And it was like a shot of him shirtless, and he's jacked, by the way, the director. And it was like, but Ric Flair was like hitting him in the chest. And I was like, was that a bit you were gonna even fucking think about putting in this goddamn movie? Like, get the fuck out of here with
don't
this shit.
I don't like it. It didn't have a 30 for 30 feel to me. Like, it didn't have that, like, dramatic.
You didn't have your narrator.
Mm-mm.
Usually the 30 for 30 is like, shit, you remember the Boston LA one? It was fucking, you know, Wahlberg.
They're
and
always
Ice
amazing
Cube.
By the way.
Yeah. And they always choose great narrators that go with the city or the theme or the culture or
great shots,
whatever,
like,
it is, like
spanning city shots, at least, or like just these dramatic,
yeah,
like, great.
Like, you should have had somebody that fits up with the genre and the thing, like, as a narrator. I thought, like, Blake Shelton, to me, would have been a fascinating narrator for something like that. I wanted to hear a Southern drawl.
Okay.
I mean, Ric Flair's a...
I thought it was going to be, like, Cena or, like, someone in the game.
No. I think it should have been... Because they usually pair up, like, a musician or somebody like that.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, Ice Cube did the LA Lakers one with Wahlberg. Donnie, you know, from NKOTB, obviously. Not Sick Mock. And they've done that before in the past, but it's like, give me a recognizable Southern voice. Like, give me a McConaughey. Give me the South, because that was Ric Flair. Like, that was...
Sure.
I needed something like that.
But he wasn't Southern. He was Midwest.
He was, but, like, when he wrestled in the NWA and all that shit, like, it was all in the South. Like, he lives in, like, he splits time between Atlanta and Charlotte. Like, all of that shit back in the day was all in the South. So, like, he was always wrestling in the South. Like,
yeah, it needed something.
It needed something like along those lines.
It was slow moving, guys. And, you know, like, I saw a couple comments that were like, yeah, it was awesome. But no one was like, yes.
Well, and here's the thing is, like, his story and his life is so fascinating. Had it been shot correctly.
Ugh, I was ready to be blown away.
Same here. And it was like, I don't know, man. It did. It was almost like they didn't put the money in, or the like. The editing was off.
Seemed
something.
Cheap.
Yeah, because there was the other thing that I hate as a director is animated stories that go over the stories back and forth. Like that is the cheapest way to tell
move
a story.
It forward,
and yeah, show to me for a documentary and a 30 for 30 in particular. They never do that shit.
Mm-mm.
They usually put the real pictures or go back and find the places that they were talking about and shoot it with, you know, footage to accompany the stories and all that stuff. And they didn't do that either. And I was like, man, what the, I don't know. It was puzzling, but you know, look, Ric Flair brought the fucking thunder. He was awesome.
He was funny.
Funny, affable. His stories were awesome. His life was fucking
very
awesome.
Honest.
Yeah. And like, it was good because of Ric Flair, but it was not good because of the director. So, you know, I got through it and it was fine. But it's like, man, Ric Flair deserved better than that. You should have brought the fucking thunder and brought in a sweet dope ass director. It felt flat to me a little bit, and it sucks, man, because I'd waited for that forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Ric Flair is a fucking god to me. And look, some of the shit was awesome, like that I didn't know. About him always pulling out his dick on airplanes and like everywhere. They were like, man, no one pulled their dick out more than Ric Flair.
Woo.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.
That was great. Like, yeah, I mean, there were so many great stories. You had so much to work with. Like, fuck, man. So that's my one complaint on it was the directing and the narration of it. Like, there was no narrator.
No narration.
No narrator. It was just the director asking questions where you're like, hey, bro. That's fucking SportsCenter. That's a SportsCenter interview. That is not a fucking 30 for 30 interview.
Yeah.
Get your shit together.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people ask me if I watched it in the autographed robe you got me for our anniversary.
Sure.
Yes, it did.
Absolutely.
Yes, it did.
You were ready?
Woo!
Yeah. Ooh. That was piercing.
You want to get a woo two time? Give me a two-time woo. Give me a two-time woo.
Two-time woo.
Two, yep. I need it from you. Woo!
Oh,
woo!
Oh, oh.
There we go. Oh, no.
Woo!
There it is. There it is.
I don't do the woo, so I don't know why you were asking me.
Well,
to.
You're the woman of a thousand voices.
It's not a thing I do.
Yeah, you're a woman of a thousand voices. Master
and I'm good at all of them.
Yeah. So I figured you could give me a simple woo woo. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we got through it. His story was awesome, and you know, it's one of those things you can't go back and do. I still hope I get to play him in a fucking biopic.
Do you think that they're gonna? Is there more of a chance of them to make it now or less? Like, did that 30 for 30 need to be amazing for them to want to make the biopic?
No,
or are they going?
Look, you write a good script.
Like, they're going to do it, right? Or
no, that's not even a thing. No, they're not. They're that like a movie has not been shopped. Nothing. So I want to make that clear. Like by me saying,
are you in the or is it in the works?
It is not in the
by
works.
By you. Okay.
Well, I would like to, but that is such a monumental task. Somebody else asked me that too, where it was just like, hey, you always talk about this on your show. I was like, yes, it is not in the. It's not an existing project. It's not in the works. There's no script. There's no nothing. If I was going to tackle something like that, I would not do it independently on my own. Where those biopics. Trying to break down somebody's life into a 90 to 120 minutes feature film requires so much work and research that, boy, to do it, I mean, it would take a while. It would take a long time to get that perfected, and that's why it takes biopics a long time to get made. Look, that Janis Joplin one is probably the most infamous in Hollywood. Where they've had this fucking script for Janis Joplin since the 90s. I mean, that has just been, man, we want to make a Janis biopic. Here's who's been attached over the years. Amy Adams, Pink, fucking Kate Hudson. I mean, it's, and they keep hitting stumbling blocks. Then there was a competing one where like the family had said, no, we'll only sign off on half of the songs. Because the other half are owned by somebody else, like their covers.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think Gwyneth Paltrow would do a good.
Oh, Christ.
Don't you think?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Joking.
Goopy jeans.
Just joking.
No, I know.
Fucking
I know.
Try.
But they're really hard to get right. And the latest one is the Freddie Mercury one that's coming out next year. That script was around for...
It's gone through like three Freddie Mercuries by now, too.
Yeah, they finally got one, and they're done shooting, by the way. So it's Mr. Robot is playing Freddie Mercury.
Malik or...
Yeah. And the fucked up thing was they had the dream. They had the dream of Sacha Baron Cohen was going to be Freddie Mercury.
I was so excited about
and
that.
And he worked on the script for 3 years. So like this script took 3 years to make. And here's what the real story is about it, by the way. So when this comes out next year and you see it, you're going to be like, oh man, fuck. Now that I know it was supposed to be Sacha Baron Cohen, how did this get fucked up? Here's how that project got fucked up in the end was they were getting ready to shoot. I mean, they were 4 or 5 months away. Sacha Baron Cohen was rehearsing forever. The band Queen got a hold of the script beforehand and they had to sign off on it because he had kept it private for a long time. And they realized that this script was about Freddie Mercury and it not about the band. And the band was like, no, we were the band of Queen. We were more than Freddie Mercury. They also weren't happy with the way that how graphic the gay scenes were, the gay love scenes, and AIDS and drugs and all of that shit. And so they got in a fight with Sacha Baron Cohen. And Sacha Baron Cohen said, look, I'm not going to fucking make a goddamn PG-13 movie out of this. Like
for Freddie Mercury.
For Freddie Mercury.
No,
he goes,
thank
you.
You
can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And they were stunned and they were like, great, we'll fucking get somebody else. So they got a rewrite of this script with the band. The band came in and put more of them in it. And it's going to be fine. It's going to be a middle of the road fucking thing. And Mr. Robot's in it. So it's like, you know, whatever. But it could have been great.
Yeah.
NWA script was another one. That one was out there for shit, man. I want to say close to 15 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So... It's those biopics are tough. You would have to pay me a decent amount of money to even start it, only because I know you're years away from shooting. So like, you know, if you're gonna put that much time out of your life, that it's gonna be your job essentially every day, man. I mean, it's really hard. Fuck, even Ray, man, they had to sign off on that, and he wanted to see the fucking movie. And he can't see.
So it was just going to boom.
Yeah. He can't see. So they went in and played it for him and he just listened to it and was like, oh, this is awesome. And he fucking died like, you know, a couple months later. But yeah, everybody wants approval. And then you don't know who owns, you know, these life rights and movie rights and all of this shit. Like, it's tough. I mean, obviously, Ric Flair is a different story because he's still alive. But negotiating with the WWF. NWA and WWE would be a fucking
Doesn't
mess.
Doesn't it seem like Ric Flair, though, would be like, yeah, like I did that. He seemed like in the documentary he was not, he was ashamed, but he was definitely not denying.
I don't think he was ashamed.
Like, no.
Yeah.
And that was another thing. But I mean, he wasn't like shying away from anything or
no.
He would tell it and laugh. And so, again, I think that biopic would probably be an easy sign. I mean, he'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
I already said all of it and like that was my life.
Yeah.
That's what I did. 100%.
Yeah. I think
the shitty thing would be is if he died, his family would be the one that wouldn't want it to come like
No, I think they're cool with it. The daughter she's champion right now. So I think she knows that world well enough where it's like, all right, cool. And especially have this 30 for 30 dropping, there's not really any hiding. I mean, fuck, last night he was like, look, you know, they asked him point blank, how many women have you slept with? And he was like,
10.
It's got to be over 10,000. And, you know, they even left in a really weird line where it was like, yeah, you know, I masturbated twice a day and like that wasn't good enough. You know, I was like,
Like a sex addiction type of alluding.
Yeah. He wasn't alluding to it. He was saying it outright. Oh, okay, like, hey, okay. I'm fucking addicted to sex and I love it. Like, he was like, I love being Ric Flair. And that was that's what I love about Ric Flair was he was like, look, I didn't, he came out at the end and said, look, I know I'm not a good husband. I know I wasn't a good father.
Right.
And then they were like, well, what do you want to be remembered as? And he was like, I want to be known as the greatest wrestler of all time and the greatest entertainer, one of the greatest entertainers of all time, but definitely the best wrestler of all time. And that's it. I mean, he was like, I love being Ric Flair. It is fucking awesome. And I was like, shit. Yes, it is. It is being awesome being Ric Flair. You know, look, he doesn't get married or whatever. Then fuck, man, he's Ric Flair, right. You know?
But he did a couple times. I know. He had kids.
I know. So. You know the beauty of it too? Here's the beautiful thing on Instagram. After there was a screening last night in, it looked like Charlotte, North Carolina. I think he's living in Charlotte now. Charlotte or Atlanta. They were outside the movie theater and he was with his first ex-wife.
The one that was in the
movie. Yeah, one that was in the doc, and then his current fiance. And he put up a post on Twitter that just said, first and last. And he was in the middle of them. Oh, and it was like, woo, that's Ric Flair. Like, that's fucking Ric Flair. And it was hilarious. And like, they were in on the joke and like the girls were laughing. And that's fucking Ric Flair.
Wow.
And then today they had like a thing of like, have you seen Ric Flair and Charlotte hanging out? And what was your story about him?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. But so like, dude, there was hundreds of stories of like Ric Flair and Charlotte just like hanging out, doing shit, like talking to people, drinking with people.
Oh, yeah. And they said, that's the beauty is that you would see him out because he loves doing it. It's not like he's like,
he loves being Ric Flair.
I'm out of the limelight, guys. I'm over it. It's like, no, he wants you to recognize him. He wants you to come up to him. Yeah.
And so every waiter in the city said that he always tipped 40%.
Good.
Talked to everybody, signed and everything, posed with everything. Like, he's right. That dude. He's Ric Flair, man. And fuck, it's awesome. Look, there was a story where he ordered 127 kamikazes for the entire bar, in this dive bar they were in, and the guy was like, man, there was only 10 of us in there.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, and he personally handed them out to strangers, to the people in the bar. He was like, dude, I want everybody to fucking party with me tonight. We're not going home until we finish all 127 of these shots.
That. I mean, I have to respect a true party animal.
You remember that one night we were in a screening in Columbus, Ohio, and our good buddy Richard.
Oh, yes.
Richard fucking bought, 90 shots for the death of Harambe?
For the whole bar.
For the whole bar. And, you know, fuck, man. There was 2-3 going around. And, I mean, we raged in that place. Absolutely rage.
Oh, yeah. He was the hero of the evening.
He was great. And if you can live your life like that all the time, like, it's a fucking blast. I get it. I get why he wanted to be Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Get it.
I mean, Richard's a Columbus hero, you know?
Legend.
He has it like that.
Best tailgate in the biz.
Best tailgate in the biz.
Yeah. Best tailgate in the biz. But I want to get to this other fucking story here.
Sure.
About the sexual allegations, because there was one today that was super shocking to me.
Ugh.
It was against Mariah Carey.
Mm.
A former bodyguard is suing her.
Yeah.
For, he said he was sexually harassed by Mariah Carey.
Mm-mm.
And that she would like pop out a tit or flash her bush in front of him, ask him to stay in the room, was wearing like see-through negligees and shit like that.
Actually, one time, and he went to the room.
Here's the thing about this, and like, whoever this guy is, I don't give a fuck what this sounds like. This guy is a fucking pussy. Like,
a pussy piece of shit.
This is crazy. Who doesn't want to fuck Mariah Carey? I don't care.
Do
I don't.
You?
Here's my point to this. I don't care. She's fat Mariah Carey, thin Mariah Carey, whatever. You're some fucking no-named dickhole from wherever you're from, and you're a bodyguard. You're not, dude. Just for the simple fact of telling your buddies that you fucked Mariah Carey. What, are you crazy? There's no one who would turn that down just to be like, oh man, I got this crazy story, man. So I fucked Mariah Carey this one night. What? You fucked Mariah Carey? Like, as a dude talking to other dudes, that's a story that is legendary till the end of fucking time. You're going to tell me this guy, oh my God, I get sexually harassed by Mariah Carey. Fucking give me the job, you know? Give anybody, any other man in America the goddamn job. Like, you're fucking Mariah Carey. That's your job, bro. That's your fucking job. And his salary was unbelievable. He was paying him like, she was paying him like 175 grand. So you want to tell me that you got to travel around, kind of protect Mariah Carey from what, shooters or fucking assailants?
Gay guy fans.
Yeah. You got to slap some gay guys around, you know, at her Vegas
shows.
Stay away
from Mariah, girlfriend.
And then afterwards, maybe go up and fuck Mariah Carey. Like, what? What? You're going to sue her for that? Like, fuck off, dude.
So the real deal is that it was a dispute about money and what he got paid.
Allegedly.
He turned it into, that was an add-on. So she also would, like, call him, like, Nazi and, like, member of the KKK and, like.
Yeah, but you've seen her cribs. She was pretty fucking funny on that, where it's just, like, I think she has a sense of humor about
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I think that is an add-on of, like, you know, it's like she's joking around, but he can add it to the lawsuit kind of thing.
Oh, God.
And so it started out at the beginning of the lawsuit. It's about money and what he was supposed to get paid and what she's not paying him. And then at the very bottom, also one time when I went up into her room to move her luggage, she had a see-through robe with nothing on underneath. And when I tried to leave.
Fucked, bro.
Exactly. So that kind of shit is like, do not use sexual harassment to add on to your money lawsuit when there's actually like people getting fucking raped and shit.
Well, none of that, but you're getting paid 175 grand. If Mariah Carey wants to fucking sexually harass you as a dude, go for it, homeboy. Like, that is crazy to me. That is fucking crazy to me. Fuck, the only time I was trying to think today, I was like, have I heard a fucking crazier story than that? One time I have. With Christina Aguilera, I've heard a crazier story one time where, remember her first husband, the gimpy looking guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah.
Do you, the fucking story that I heard, by the way, in fucking LA was like, I heard this from like 5 or 6 people, was that he got fed up with, I guess she's bisexual and she was always hooking up with her backup dancers and shit on tour, wherever they were. And like, he'd walk in, some other girl was eating her pussy. And like, he finally just had enough and was just like, I am out of here. I cannot deal with this anymore.
Sure.
Your fucking job as an ugly, because that guy's one of the ugliest dudes on the planet.
Sure.
As an ugly, gimpy fucking dude like that, mm-hmm. for Christina Aguilera, voice of a generation, maybe, carry the fucking bag. Shut the fuck up and let her get her pussy eaten by somebody else and move on about your goddamn jack off in the corner. Like, get over it, bud. Like,
right.
Doesn't make any fucking sense to me. That like, that's insane. Where is that guy now? Because now, like, I'm sure he's sitting on a pile of cash from her. But
right.
Like, you know, he's not dating anybody hotter than Christina Aguilera. Like,
mm-mm.
That's crazy. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, even hot dog eating Christina is pretty cute.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, you still like
even
nuts.
Hot dogger.
Nuts. Even Mariah Carey, like, I bet it's fun where you're just sitting around, like, she's throwing champagne. She's all hopped up on pills. And I bet you she offers people pills. You want some pills? Take some pills with me. I don't want to be alone taking these pills.
Oh, for sure.
Let's take some fucking pills together and let's just watch like weird shit. Like,
mm-hmm. Watch yourself.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Why not? Like, you go through the old fucking. You know, like the old hits.
Yeah.
Go through the hits with Mariah. Have a good time. Take a fucking bubble bath. I'm sure mm-hmm. she's got a claw foot that's ridiculous. You know, mm-hmm. it's probably bedazzled the fuck out of. Like, I'm sure it's a fucking weird blast that, like, you can get lost in for like 6 months and be like, oh man, that was a weird period of my life. Like, fucking
the
Picasso's.
Lost years.
Yeah.
The
Picasso's
Mariah,
blue
the
period.
Mariah days. Yeah. Yeah.
Just spend a good 6 month bender with Mariah and then figure out your life from there. And you're getting paid handsomely for it. Like, this shit, I don't want to fucking hear about. Like, as a man, if you're a fucking man out there and you're sexually harassed by a woman who's like above a 5, fuck off, bro. Like, keep it way buried down deep inside and realize that you're a fucking man with a set of dick and balls, and you're not going to fucking call somebody that, oh my God, a woman over a 6 is groping me and showing me her pussy and her tats. That's crazy. No, it's not, dude. Take your fucking lumps, 2 of them preferably, right to the fucking dome and move on with your fucking life. Don't file a suit like that. Are you shitting me? Fuck. I mean, that's clown shoes, bro. I mean, that is fucking straight clown shoes.
Right.
That is line up 6-10 buckets in a row, take a ping pong, and fucking wear your clown shoes and try to get it in the six, dude. Try to get the bozo surprise of the six. You know it's going to be a red bike, and he's going to fucking... and fucking deliver it himself. Clown shoes, bro. Fuck me, man. So when I read that, I was not only upset for Mariah, but I was upset for men in general. It was just like, fuck. Can we not just be men? Like, mm-hmm. Be thankful that you're getting sexually harassed. Like, right. That's a gift. That is a fucking gift. Santa's not going to put that underneath your tree. Shit, that's a once in a lifetime thing right there. Mm-hmm. I remember my buddy, I think we maybe touched on this before. A buddy of mine in eighth grade was fucking this ridiculously hot 28-year-old babysitter that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, oh my God, it got to be too much. Like, I just had to break up with her. I had to end this. And I was like, what? Are you fucking joking me? And it was like, yeah, it was just, you know, it's too crazy. We were just having sex all the time and I just couldn't study and get things done. I was like, what? Yeah. In eighth grade? Come on, dude. Get your fucking shit together.
Mm.
No, that is, which will bring me back to the other thing. The other fucking, and I'll put a fucking B on this bonnet and we'll be done with this. But any fucking teacher, hot ass teacher, who has sex with the high school student and then they get sued for that. No. Like every male above the age of 14 years old, they get to fuck a hot ass teacher by a babysitter. Mm-hmm. They're doing that every time. Like that is totally mutual consent.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. Like,
right.
That's crazy. When I see these, like, oh my God, I've fucked the teacher and I had to tell on her. I was like, no. You keep that secret to yourself and you enjoy the rest of your high school years because it will never get that good again the rest of your life. Like, come on, dude. There's a fucking bro code, man. And this type of shit is fucking everything else up, man. Now you're throwing it away for the rest of people out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say fucking Carrie Underwood let's say she gets divorced from that hockey husband. She gets a little tipsy on the pills later on in life. Whoever's going to be her bodyguard, you're fucking it up for that guy. Mm-hmm. You're fucking it up for that guy. Cause then she's going to be guarded. They'll be like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't pop a tit out and fucking invite him in. Like, come on, man. You're ruining the fucking male species with that shit. I don't know his name. I don't have it in front of me, but whoever he is, shame, 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 shame. That's the way I feel about it.
Right.
But I'm glad I didn't look. I'm glad I didn't really go off about it that much.
Totally.
When I read that today, boy, it is rare that I bubble up in anger. I was like, what? You're ruining it for the rest of the male population. Get a grope on, dude. Let Mariah Carey grab your dick. Fuck, man. Fuck. I want to thank everybody, too, by the way, for Not Another War Story. Not a war story. The documentary about the making of Range 15
mm-hmm.
Is out. iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. It's out everywhere. It dropped last night, so like we were in between shows, so I didn't really get to talk about it much. But it came out last night. I woke up this morning. Number one movie in the world on iTunes, documentaries. The number one documentary in the world on iTunes, Not a War Story, The Making of Range 15.
Crazy.
And super shocked. I got fucking a million emails today of like, hey, man, I didn't know you went through all this. Like, I didn't know this is what it took to make a movie. Like, I had no fucking idea. To anybody out there who has dreamed of making a movie or thinking about making a movie or has a script or an idea or something, rent this movie or buy it or you know, it's on iTunes or fucking Amazon, rent it or buy it and you can really see what goes on in it to make a movie.
Challenges, anything, the stress, that might come up,
the fucking firing people, mm-hmm. you're behind on time, how much money everything costs,
paying people off,
how much you get extorted,
getting kicked off locations, calling the cops,
calling the police.
It has everything.
It has everything, and it will literally answer every question you have. Like I rewatched a little bit of it last night, And, you know, I had forgotten because the cameras are there, but I'm not a big, like, I enjoy making sketches and movies and all that stuff, but I'm not a big, like, I don't want cameras in my face all day. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't have a reality show. It's just not me. But, you know, you forget that they're there. And I was just like, fuck, I was watching some scenes last night. And I was like, shit, I forgot. I paid that guy off. I forgot. I told somebody in there, it was like, when that location got shut down, of like, how much do we have to give this guy to just shut the fuck up and leave? How much money is it? I've got cash on me. And that's in the documentary. The other fascinating thing about it, and this is the reason why I say, if you've ever thought about making a movie or wanted to make a movie, why you should watch this is, all of the guys in this movie they'd never made a movie before. So you get to see their shock and surprise of like what goes on during all of this process, where you're obviously used to it. You've seen this shit a million times on movie sets.
But yeah.
Well, a few times.
A few times I have seen it. It was pretty normal. Yeah. But that shoot was very challenging.
Really, and really fucking
there
hard.
Was like one unifying thing. And I think Rocco touched on it a little bit in his like snippet on his page. But like, there was one unifying thing that kind of kept us all going. And it's that like the real makers of the movie were you guys, a lot of you guys that listen, but people that contributed to the Indiegogo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, there were days when it was just like, what the fuck are we doing? And you had to like be like, oh shit, like we're doing it because the people that paid for it are going to be watching it. And that doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, because I mean,
that's never been an experience that I've had where like I make a movie and like it's usually like the director wants his vision and it's like all of this, but everyone on that set just wanted to make everyone happy that bought it. And so we had this huge, I don't know, it was weight of that.
Yeah, and
it was different. It was really different.
The other thing I will say on that is, look, I directed Range 15. But I'm not one of those people who is like, I'm going to make my vision. Like, I know that everybody paid for this movie through Indiegogo.
Right. We all did.
Yeah.
So it was like.
And I know the type of movie that they wanted. By they, I'm talking about Ranger Up and Article 15.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly what they wanted to do. And I executed it to that vision. I invited them into the edit to the final stages of edit and said, hey, if there's anything you're unhappy with, let's change this. And because I want to give the best movie we can to the people who paid for this in Indiegogo and the supporters of the film. And so what you see is what we tried to do. Typically, it does not work like that. Typically, you have some fucking cockbag director who's just like, I'm
going to
make my own
vision or my
fucking product. Yeah.
Or you have a big group of people that come in and check on you and make sure things are, you know, like going the way that they want. And then there's all these cooks in the kitchen and like, that's another way it can go. But this was like,
yeah,
it was very different.
And
for that reason,
you know, look, a lot of my films, I've done exactly what I wanted to do, but I also wasn't depending upon an audience to pay for the movie. Like, you know, I'm making movies that I think an audience will like, and then it will go out. This was the opposite, where it was like, hey, the audience paid for this movie. I want to give them something the audience wants. Like, mm-hmm. So.
And also, like, Miles Teller touched on it a little bit, too, of, like, this community is, like, you know, they're skeptical. They want,
yeah,
you know, like, they know what they want. They know what they want to see. And you want to just, like, give that to them.
For sure.
But it's hard, like. There wasn't many civilians in the like cast and crew and stuff. But for us, it's like we're just looking to the other people on set to tell us what that is, because we just want that. We just want to be authentic. You don't want the wrath. You don't want the scrutiny of this community, because, you know.
Yeah. So I think we delivered all the way around. And I think if you watch Not a War Story and you see what everybody went through to try to give that experience to everybody, it'll help. Like, you'll be like, oh my God, I had no fucking idea. Like, all the emails I got today were just like, holy shit, bro. I can't believe you did that.
And a lot of you guys are documentary buffs, as am I. Yeah. So like in that sense, it's really good.
Yeah.
Music's good. Like it's a good documentary.
Good doc. So. Highly recommend it. And then look, man, in 13 days, I have another movie coming out. Drinking Bros Live, the Shaved Eagle tour, and that's fucking equally crazy, but in a different light. Like
way, yeah.
It's 100% comedy where it's just like balls to the wall. Jesus Christ, I can't believe they fucking did that shit. Like, man, I forgot like that guy at the end who was trying to make out with me. Like, you know.
Oh, that's right.
Whew, boy, there's that. That is a crazy fucking movie. So that'll be fun on November 21st. And yeah, super fucking stoked. You can get that on iTunes as well. Speaking of iTunes, I know I talked about this Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon TV show. While back, there was a bidding war for it today. Apple bought it. So Apple is
gonna be a thing.
Yeah, they put $2 billion into original programming. I don't know what this bidding war was, but the reason why I wanted to bring this up today is it was picked up for two seasons. So you're not even seeing what the pilot's like. This could be a pile of shit. And they don't have a choice but to shoot two full seasons of this thing, which is real dangerous because you see the TV shows that are on now and you might be a fan of them. You might not be a fan of them, but whether you are, or you aren't, they all go through a pilot season that is heavily judged and then they come out simply for the fact of if it sucks, the pilot, they do not want to pay for, you know, 22 of these goddamn things. And then you're stuck with a show that's nobody's watching. And you can't sell it to advertisers. If this show sucks out of the gate for Apple, this is going to bury their original content. And I'll tell you why. With Netflix, they came out of the box with Orange is the New Black. I believe that was their first foray into scripted TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it crushed.
Yeah.
Then they just...
Everything else they've done is crushed.
Followed up with hit after hit after hit, Bloodline... fuck Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm. They did like Arrested Development. They're taking on like last seasons of stuff and like
yeah, right? and Fuller reboots House and like Fuller I mean, House literally and Gilmore Girls and yeah, all that shit.
Everything they do.
And now they're massive, but you cannot fumble and fuck it up at the beginning or it kills a network. And if you go back and look at all of the networks, you know, in the history of television, which is. I know what you're saying. It's like, hey, Ross, that's an app. It's not television. That's television now. Television is going to be all apps, smart apps in a few minutes here. I feel like we're so close to that now where it's like, wait, you don't have a smart TV with an Apple TV mm-hmm. or Roku or whatever. If you fumble and fuck this up on your first initial get, it is hard to find an audience after that. FXX is a great example now where it's like, they have not had a real hit off that network. Therefore, nobody's really watching that network. All of these networks, it takes one to break out. So you have like Comedy Central or FX itself. FX really broke when It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia came out. It was one of their first shows, and that helped break the network. Mm-hmm. MTV, when they started doing original programming, it was, you know, right around the Real World years was the first time they experimented with something like that. Real World blew up, and then you had all the other shit, and then it folded into Jackass. And you were like, oh, fuck. And then, you know, the Fantasy Factory and all that other bullshit, the Ridiculous, Wild and Out, everything else. And you need one, but it's got to be soon, or everybody doesn't take you seriously. So this is going to be real fucking interesting to see what's going to happen with this show. Reese Witherspoon, though,
she doesn't usually miss.
No, and she takes everything extremely seriously.
Boss. Yeah,
she's a fucking boss ass bitch, and I think with two seasons on her shoulders, she'll step up and make sure that this is all right. I think, but if it fails, you'll know because I can promise you, the bidding war for this was probably so extreme between them and Netflix and Amazon that like. I would wager to say they're probably getting $2 million an episode.
Yeah.
Each.
Yeah.
Well, look, yeah, the highest paid actors are like $1 million a piece right now. So like, I think this is a guess. I think they're doubling down and going $2 million a pop on these two. and really going for the home run on this. And then last but not least, Stranger Things. Finishing up Stranger Things now. And I'm going to go ahead and say this. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this season was better than the first.
Yep.
And I loved the first season of Stranger Things. It was fucking incredible. And I thought to myself, hey, this turnaround time of you guys flipping this and shooting this and putting this out is too fast. Like, you cannot write that fast and make it great. They did. And it was fucking incredible.
It's incredible. And I think it was good that they got them right back into
when they're still kids.
When they're still kids, and when they're still, there's an element too of, like, I think at that time when they shot, is that before all of the crazy shit happened with them?
No, they were going through it.
They were going through it. Yeah, but I think there's an element of, like, I didn't want to see these, like, kids that are, like, super famous now
and assholes and
starting to play these roles. Like, I wanted to see them still.
And they were
in it. Yeah,
they were. And, you know, there was only 9 episodes, but so at least they could gun them out and they could do their other shit. Like, that's not a very long season, but
Sean Astin, that's all I'm going to say.
They were great. And, like, Sean Astin was great. Like, he was in Range 15.
He was really good.
He was fucking really good in this show. And yeah,
that's all.
We're not going to give a spoiler alert in case you haven't seen it. But Sean Astin
really
is great.
Good. He's just really good.
Great, and it was good to see him, especially in, like, that world.
Bob.
Because if you look at his career and his life and all that shit, like, those kids to me remind me of the Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's almost coming full circle for Sean Astin, and it was great.
Well, even putting Winona Ryder in it in the first season, gosh, that's so perfect. Like, her and where she is, like, in her life, her career, where she came from, like, it was so perfect. And so Sean asked, and then Modine too, right? So it was just, is that his name?
Yeah, yeah,
the
Matthew
guy that's
Modine,
Papa whatever.
Yeah.
So he was perfect too, like, perfectly in that era.
Paul Reiser was, they brought him, they dug him.
I wasn't a huge fan of that.
I wasn't
either.
It could have been anybody. It should have been Ray Wise.
Astin was
Ray Wise would have been
perfect.
Yes.
For that exact thing. Goonies. His era, everything.
He was great. So I was looking it up online today, and just to see, like, how they got it so right. And you know, they said they went through a lot of rewrites, and that, like, you know, they take it so seriously that they were, you know, afraid to fuck it up and everything. And they were like, they said the Duffer Brothers were like, we almost fucked it up last season. They said that originally 11 was supposed to die in the season finale of 1.
Oh my gosh.
No. Can you imagine that?
Can you imagine what our lives would be like? No.
Yeah.
those Duffer Brothers.
I know. And Sean Astin on his Instagram, he fucking loves them. He was like, dude, they're...
Who doesn't?
I know. Look.
These are, it's like, who are you?
I know.
Why are you so amazing?
Writing their own ticket right now as we speak and printing their own money.
Oh yeah, obviously
somewhere. But because you can, that's a bold move of you know, if they would have killed off 11, I don't think this season would have worked at all. She's great, and as sassy as she is, like, you know, in these interviews now, like, she's really, like, you can tell if there is still theaters in 10 years, she's gonna win 30 Oscars. Like,
she just reminds me.
You've seen her fucking interviews where you're just like, "Hey, man, you're 12 and you're talking like you're 35 years old." Like,
I don't love that, but that's cool.
I don't either, and that's what I'm saying. Like,
I don't love a precocious
me
kid.
Neither. Me neither.
Just
like, she's already fighting for, like, women's rights, and you're like, "Dude, you're 12. You're 12 years old."
Mm-mm.
But yeah, she reminds me of a young Natalie Portman.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I think if she sticks around, and look, again, if they're still making dramas and there's movies in theaters in 10 years, she could win numerous Oscars if given the chance. And, you know, I'm sure she'll win this year. And that kid who was non-existent last
came
season.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, because he wasn't in it last year. He was fucking dead the whole year.
Funny. And even at the end, I was like, who is this kid? Do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, they got the
boring
one.
And he was amazing this year.
And then he's like, oh.
Yeah. Crazy. But it's a big fan of Stranger Things. And I know there's a lot of hype on it out there. like, we're reading it, everybody's talking about it, and fucking everybody's a Halloween, but look, dude, the hype is real. The show's fucking great. Huge fan of it. This will bring us to the revolutionary figure of the day, shall we?
We shall.
This one's childish, simple, small.
Dumb.
I wanted to pop back home for the Falcons game this weekend to Atlanta. Not going to be able to do it.
Are you not?
No. It's just, it's too hard of a turnaround real quick, and I got to finish this fucking book. Yeah. I got to finish the sequel. I got to finish the sequel of A Night She Cries.
It's just a day.
It's due in a few weeks. This one is going out to my favorite player, since I'm not going to be able to be there for the Falcons-Cowboys game this weekend, which is one of our biggest games. It's going out to my favorite player, who wears the number 11 for the Falcons. I'm talking about Julio Jones. He's also on my fantasy team.
Oh, yes. You do love a little Julio.
Love Julio. He's on my fantasy team. He's been okay this year, but he's one of my favorite players, and he's my favorite 11 on the Falcons for Stranger Things. So there we go.
No, I got it.
Yeah. That rug's really tying the whole room together, Jabes.
I got it from when you first said it. I got it.
Yeah. And last but not least, if you're a man out there, and Mariah Carey invites you in to bang her, do it. Just do it. Don't be a fucking pussy about it. For Jesse Wiseman, a.k.a. the Jables, I am Ross Patterson. This is The Revolution. Good night, everyone.
Good night.